Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
And good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. Thanks for tuning in today. We're broadcasting from the Minnesota Capitol, where the legislature wrapped up its 2018 session shortly before midnight last night. The Republican-controlled House and Senate passed a big tax bill that would line up Minnesota's system with the new federal law and provide schools with access to money to prevent layoffs in the next school year. They also passed a nearly 1,000-page budget bill that encompassed a variety of subjects. It contained money to respond to the opioid crisis, to make school buildings safer, to expand broadband internet service in rural Minnesota, and it started the process of putting in new protections for nursing home residents. But all that may fall by the wayside. DFL Governor Mark Dayton says he will veto those bills, leaving a big question mark about what lawmakers will have to show for their efforts here over the last 3 months. We're going to talk about the just-completed legislative session this hour. Later, I'll be joined by Republican leaders of the House and Senate. But first up, it's the Democrats. Tom Bach is the Senate Minority Leader. He's a DFLer from Cook. And Melissa Hortman is the House Minority Leader. She represents Brooklyn Park. Thanks for being here, both of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was a late night. Let me start with you, Representative Hortman. Is there any doubt in your mind that the governor will go ahead and veto these bills?
There isn't a lot of doubt in my mind that he will veto the bills, mainly because of the quality of what was in there. There was certainly a quantity of pages, but the subject matter that was in there, the work that was done, was really inadequate. On the elder care abuse epidemic, for example, AARP said they were actually going backwards in the bill. So we've highlighted this huge problem we have in Minnesota where elders aren't being treated well. And instead of doing something to improve the situation for senior citizens, the bill that the Republicans put in front of the governor in that 990 pages actually took us backwards on taking care of seniors.
And Senator Bach, do you think it was right for the governor to say he'll veto that tax bill? And do you expect him to follow through?
Well, I intend to reach out to him and ask him to veto both the tax bill and the supplemental budget bill. And I don't think they deserve his support. They, you know, much like there were no votes in the Senate for the tax bill or the budget bill, we weren't included. Democrats were not included in the conversation at all on the tax bill or on the budget bill in the Senate. The governor was included only at the margins. And I just don't think you can expect somebody to support a bill when they weren't allowed the opportunity to participate in assembling what's in it. So, you know, much like last year, and last year he took it out on him and vetoed the entire legislative budget. I don't know what he's going to do for sure on these bills, but I can tell you, if I was governor, I'd be looking through that bonding bill, and I'd be looking to take some pain out on some of the people that treated me poorly during the session by line item vetoing some provisions.
Hmm. And we should say that the bonding bill passed last night. A pension fix bill passed with unanimous support. You think the governor might not do all those projects in the bonding bill, though?
Oh, I think there's a high probability that some of those projects will come out of the bill. I had that conversation with him last night when I was closing up the final deal on the on what the bonding bill would look like with the Republican leaders, and we talked a little bit about the bonding bill and some of the provisions I was trying to get in the last night, and he indicated he was going to take a look at those projects, and he absolutely did not say he was going to support everyone. I think the Republican leaders made a mistake. If I had been negotiating that bill with the governor, and when I negotiated them with Governor Plenty, we always tried to secure agreement at the end of the session that none of the provisions in the bill would be vetoed, and there always was an agreement. But that's because the legislature and the governor were trying to work together. The legislature wasn't trying to work with this governor. So there was no opportunity, I think, for them to they were ashamed probably even to ask that he support all the provisions in the bonding bill because they know they treated him so badly.
Well, Representative Hortman, what do you think happened here? Why did this turn out so badly here? It looks to be turning out so badly in the end.
Well, the total mismanagement of the legislative session was kind of astonishing, that everything was really crammed into the last week. So they have this conference committee where they have put every single important measure that's passed this year into one conference committee report, and then they didn't finish their work on what was finally going to be in that conference committee report until 11 p.m. the night before the end of session. Then they started deleting chunks of the bill. So the reason why this legislative session will end up in a heap of ashes, likely, is because the Republicans' decision to put everything in the last week and to not engage in any meaningful compromise with the governor.
Do you think they would have been better off to do all those spending provisions in separate bills?
Yes. Traditionally, in the legislative session, we pass a number of bills that are the vast majority of green votes and a few red votes. We have broad bipartisan agreement on so many things. This is the first time I've ever seen everything corralled into one bill with an attempt to sort of hijack the governor into signing things that he was clear from the outset of the session, even in the state of the state, that he was not going to sign. So, unfortunately, a lot of good things that could have happened are going to go down the tubes with bad things.
That's Representative Melissa Hortman. She's the DFL minority leader in the Minnesota House. Senator Tom Bach is here. He's the DFL leader in the Minnesota Senate. Talking about the end of the legislative session, it happened late last night. The legislature adjourned, sine die. But it sounds like the governor is going to have the last word, at least on a couple of these major bills that Republican leaders had hoped to enact. The Senate is not up for re-election this year. The House is. Representative Hortman, how do you run on this? What's your message off this?
Well, the Republicans didn't get the job done. Minnesotans simply want us to be practical and pragmatic when we come to the state capitol. We hear from Minnesotans very loud and clear. They don't care who's right, Democrats or Republicans. They just want us to get the work done. And at the end of the day, the responsibility of the Speaker in the House and the Majority Leader in the Senate is to produce new laws. It's not about how many bills can you pass. It's about how many new laws can you create. And that requires compromise. So I think for Minnesotans out there who are looking for productivity and work product, they're pretty let down by these Republican majorities.
What do you think, Senator? What should Minnesotans make of this?
Well, I think, you know, when people go to the polls, I don't think they pay that much attention to past behavior. I actually think they shouldn't. They ought to be judging candidates based on what they say they're going to do. That's what matters. But past behavior is an indicator of where people's priorities are. And so I think they're important. I think they just fiscally mismanage the state so bad. And no Minnesotan would manage their resources that way. To provide huge tax cuts, especially to multinational corporations, $200 million of tax cuts in that bill for these big multinationals that are bringing foreign profits back, to bring them back in here without taxing them. And then because you used all the money, and I just want to remind people, when they took over in the Senate in January of 2017, I left them a $1.4 billion surplus. That's what they had to work with. And they squandered it all away, mostly on tax bills, a billion of it, probably. And they're leaving the next legislature with, I've got to fact check it, but they said last night about $20 million. And that's not even honest, because what they did last night, They wanted to make the argument they're doing something about safe schools and helping with the governor's priority on providing some one-time funding to schools. Well, it's an absolute shell game. They moved some community education money, made it fungible. Well, one of the things that community education money pays for is early childhood programs. So they basically said, okay, we'll let you spend it on whatever you want to spend it. We'll take your money that you get for staff development in your schools and let you spend it whatever you want to spend it on. Neither one were new money, but they tried to count it, and they're trying to hoodwink the public that somehow they're providing money for schools when it's just money the schools already have. And then the worst part is they went and stole $75 million out of the state's budget reserve last night to give it to schools. You know, at a time we have positive GDP growth, the $1.4 billion that I left them in this budget cycle wasn't enough. They had to do outrageous tax cuts, and then they had to go and raid the state's piggy bank that's put away for when we have tough economic conditions, take money out of there, to try provide some one-time relief for schools because they had overspent in the tax bill.
They said that the governor's request for that emergency school aid came in too late and that it was not something that anyone was talking about at the start of the session. He wanted $138 million, and they said it was just too complicated to find that money and do the big tax bill at the same time. Representative Hortman, what do you think of that?
It's utter hogwash because the tax bill from the Senate and the bonding bill from the Senate weren't even introduced until that time either. And the reason the governor came forward was because school districts around the state were finalizing their budgets and making clear what's going to happen in the fall, and that if we didn't provide some supplemental funding, that there would be teacher layoffs and services cut. The legislature can respond to situations like that, and we absolutely had the means to respond. They didn't have a hearing, though, on the governor's request for emergency supplemental aid until, 11 p.m. on the last night of session. That's just not how you should do business when you're in charge of running the state of Minnesota.
Let's take a caller. Mary is on the line from Minneapolis. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm wondering about this omnibus pension bill. I received both MSRS and PERA, and I'm wondering what's going on.
One of the silver linings of the legislative session was that we passed unanimously a pension bill reform. So the work that we needed to do there got done. It was a shame that it was held hostage until the very, very last minute of the legislative session. We could have passed that out in February. I think the Senate passed it unanimously in February, and the House took until about 11:45 on the last night of session to get that done.
Hmm. So it will basically it takes a little skin out of everybody in the game, right? And it's gonna...
Well, it limits some of the COLA increases going forward in pensions. And we had some pretty significant unfunded liability building up in all of the state's multiple pension plans. And to the credit of currently working state employees, they agreed to put a little bit more money off of their check into the state's pension funds. We put some general fund money in to shore them up. I take that pretty seriously. Those state employees, for all practical purposes, they work for the legislature. They're our employees. We're the ones that fund them. We're the ones that approve their contracts. And making sure that their retirement security is that they've been promised is going to be funded, I think, is a pretty important role of any employer, and I think most employers take that pretty seriously.
On the tax bill, we're going to have the Republican leaders on in a few minutes, and I'm pretty sure they're going to say, because I heard them say it last night, that the tax bill actually corporations will pay more under this bill. You just said corporations will get a huge tax break under the bill.
Well, the problem is it's kind of a play on words, is the federal tax bill that was passed, that Donald Trump's tax bill, was a really bad tax bill for Minnesota because we were one of a small number of states that used federal taxable income for our starting point. We're a relatively high income tax state. And when the federal government eliminated those state and local deductions or capped them at $10,000, Minnesotans were significantly impacted with losing all of those the miscellaneous deductions. So doing nothing would have led to significant tax increases. What the Republicans are telling you is business taxes are going up. The truth is, if we had done nothing, the current law, those businesses would have paid more.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would have taxed all of this foreign income coming in here under current law, and they decided to pass a sweetheart provision for them to limit any taxes they pay on all this repatriated income coming back. They would have paid a heck of a lot more, a couple hundred million more probably, if they hadn't passed this tax bill.
But if the governor vetoes the bill, won't those taxes go up, and won't everybody's taxes go up, and won't it be a lot harder to file your tax forms next year?
Well, we'll have current law. And, a little bit too much has been made out of we must do conformity. The business committee wanted a tax bill because they wanted to exempt all this foreign income coming in from taxes. That was their goal. But the only real people impacted are the people that itemize right now. If right now today, and I'm one of them, right now today, in 2017, I itemized on my federal return. And then I itemized on my Minnesota return. The problem with the federal bill that passed is I'm not going to itemize next year because I lost all my miscellaneous deductions. I hit the SALT cap like most Minnesotans will, the state and local tax cap. So I lost a lot of deductions. So I won't be able to itemize. So for people like that, there's about 300,000 returns. The way the law currently works is if you, because of the federal changes, if you take the standard deduction on your federal return, you have to take it on your state return. That's what people are stuck with without conformity. So there's about 300,000 returns. I'm one of them that are impacted negatively because of the limiting of all the deductions. I have to file a standard deduction next year. I can't itemize. Unfortunately, then I won't be able to itemize in Minnesota either. Mm-hmm. So that's really the only cohort of people that are going to have some tax implications.
Melissa Hortman, are you worried about that, that people are going to be facing a big headache doing their taxes or higher taxes without a tax bill?
Well, when I went and got my taxes done this year, my accountant expressed some desire that we get this work done on conformity because their work is going to be much more difficult last year. And she predicted that if we didn't do anything at the Minnesota level, that my taxes would go up by about $3,000 next year. So I think we need to do this work. And it's just too bad that the Republicans' desire to give this massive tax break to corporations got in the way of taking care of conformity. You know, at a certain point in time when you're in a dispute, you have to set aside those areas where you can't get agreement and go to the lowest common denominator where you can get agreement. And I think we could have implemented a really simple, straightforward conformity that everybody could have agreed with. But Republicans kind of went with this high-risk, high-reward strategy if they were going for this $200 million tax benefit for corporations. And Minnesotans really fell by the wayside in their calculation.
You know, I think a little bit too much gets made out of the complexity, and you'll probably hear the speaker say something today about how, well, your return's going to be the size of a phone book. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, my friend, but almost everybody files electronically nowadays, right? I mean, the only real work is going to be on the part of software developers. They're going to have to write the software that recognizes the fact that we're not in conformity with the federal government. Now, let me just say, I'm a former tax chair. We have never been in conformity with the federal government. There are always provisions that we don't conform with. The high-profile one is the estate tax provisions. How much of a person's estate when they die is not taxable for farmers or businesses that buy equipment, the 179 depreciation expensing. There's a host of federal tax provisions we've never been in conformity with. But so it'll be a little complicated for the software developers to write the software, but taxpayers really won't see any impact. They're not going to bring home a phone book. I mean, they're going to push send, and whether they owe money, they'll have to reconcile their checkbook by electronic withdrawal or deposit, I guess.
The governor said no special session. Do you expect he'll stick with that, or could there be a special session to try to fix this?
I do expect that he'll stick with a no special session pronouncement. You never know. I mean, miracles happen, but dealing with these intransigent Republican leaders has clearly not been pleasant or productive. You know, when we got to the end of session last year and the Republicans sent those cram down budget bills and they had poison pills in them and we had this line item veto of the legislative budget, the legislature should have learned one thing, and that is that you need the governor to sign the bills in order for them to become law. Since they didn't learn that lesson, and this year they employed the same strategy of sending cram down bills that they knew had a high likelihood of getting a veto, it's hard to imagine that all of a sudden the governor and these leaders start having productive conversations about some sort of compromise that would lead to a special session.
Well, let me suggest a hybrid, and I've actually asked the governor this, but it was kind of in the throes of the legislative session. So if he decides to veto the tax bill, I'm going to circle back with him. I do think the governor says his number one priority is the state's fiscal health. He wants to hand off a surplus or at least a balanced budget to the next legislature and the next governor, much unlike Tim Pawlenty handed off to him. Tim Pawlenty handed off a $6 billion deficit to the governor, and we owed schools north of $1 billion. I mean, it was really, well, $2 billion actually. The state was in tremendous financial straits when Governor Dayton took over. He doesn't want to do that for the next governor. I actually, as part of my comments in encouraging him to veto the tax bill, I'm going to suggest to him that if the fiscal health of the state is your number one thing, conformity is worth doing. And we ought to think about doing it after the election, after the November budget forecast, when we know exactly where the state's finances are for the next budget cycle. I think the prudent thing to do is after the November forecast, if the state's got some money in a balanced budget, there's a lot of work been done on conformity by the current administration, by the current commissioner of revenue. The work is all done. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take a lot to negotiate a conformity bill, just kind of a slimmed-down conformity bill that the governor could support, knowing after the November forecast and after the election that we actually had the money, and come in for a one-day special session, you know, maybe the first week of December, and pass an agreed-upon conformity bill so that the software writers then can get to work on making sure that CPAs have the software that they need going into the tax filing system after the first of the year. Mm-hmm. You could wait until January to do it, but when you got a change of administration, you got a change in all the state agency people, it'll get a lot harder. So I think if he vetoes the tax bill, I'm actually going to ask him to take a look at the state's finances after the election and after the November forecast, and maybe like that first week of December, let's come in for a day and get it done.
If the tax bill and the budget bill go down, Representative Hortman, it sounds like a lot of that school safety money that was talked about for much of the session will go down. Surprising, after Friday, there was another school shooting down in Texas. Were you surprised that that didn't come up as a standalone measure?
Very surprised. And that's just an example of the way that everything was handled this year. The school safety funding would have been agreed to by almost all members of the House and Senate. And yet it was held hostage to this tax bill that had already been vetoed. The Republican choice to make everything a titanic partisan struggle, I think, was just so unnecessary. They could have their battles with the governor, but still get some things done for Minnesotans. And school safety is one of those things we didn't get done. The other area where we really didn't see any progress were areas where there were moneyed interests working hard against reform. You know, we have an opioid abuse epidemic in this state, and we have a state representative in the House who lost a son to overdose, and we have a state senator in the Minnesota Senate who lost a daughter. And yet the pharmaceutical industry came in here and stopped the incredible work that these two members were doing. And it's really unfortunate that the Republican leaders let the pharmaceutical industry voices overpower the voices of their own members and of Minnesotans.
So there was no fee on the companies in the final version, no penny a pill. It was just coming straight out of the general fund.
And as Representative Dave Baker talked about on the Minnesota House floor, this is an epidemic created by the pharmaceutical industry. They knew exactly what they're doing. They've been making money hand over fist because people are addicted to these medications. They have a responsibility to contribute to the solution, and it was only right and fair that we expect that they do that. In unconscionable that the Republican leadership wouldn't hold the pharmaceutical industry accountable on opioids.
You know, let me just say on school safety so that listeners don't get confused. The budget bill that the governor has said he's going to veto has some one-time supplemental aid for schools. That's not the school safety issue. The school safety issue, actually, once you look at the spreadsheet, it's a line item in the bonding bill. It's the one piece that I do think the governor is certainly not going to veto in the bonding bill. I don't agree with where the money came from. They took it out of the budget reserve rather than general fund. The oversized tax bill ate up all the money, so they didn't have any money, so they took it out of the budget reserve. But there is a $25 million general fund appropriation for school safety, if you look at the spreadsheet of the bonding bill. So there will be money available for school safety, for schools that want to put in metal detectors or bulletproof glass or things to improve some of their security. There is some money in the bonding bill for that. The budget bill is going to be vetoed, and people are probably going to try to spin it that, well, the governor doesn't care about school safety. That's not school safety in the supplemental budget bill. It was this one-time infusion of money to try to mitigate some of the impacts of the budget problems in about 60 or more school districts in the state.
And a couple gun control measures got bottled up in the House early in the session. I imagine that will be an issue in the campaign. Does that help or hurt Democrats in rural Minnesota in your area, Senator?
Well, I just would say to all of the millennials out there who really put their heart into trying to get something done this year, I was very disappointed the Senate, at a minimum, didn't hold hearings on the bills. I mean, didn't even give them a chance to come to the committee table and testify. But to all those people listening, if I could ask them to just pause and think for a minute. Cell phones. Hands-free cell phones. There are somewhere between 9 and 11 kids die every single day because of distracted driving related to cell phones on our roads. Something has to be done with that. And I really hope that kids could put the same kind of energy into that issue, because that really would save a lot of lives. I'm not sure how many lives you save by requiring a background check if I'm going to sell my shotgun to my neighbor. I just don't. But these cell phones and this distracted driving is really a serious problem. And I think if kids could get behind that, I think that bill we could move along and probably could get signed. But someone's got to advocate for it.
And we're almost out of time, Representative Hortman. That's another one that never came up. It passed committees in the House. The hands-free cell phones never came up on the floor. Do you think you'll be able to change control in the November election?
I do. I think that these Republicans are very out of touch with where Minnesotans are. Minnesotans want us to get the work done. And they want a state where things work better for everyone. And with Republicans really prioritizing corporations, special interests, and the wealthy this session, I think when Minnesotans go out to vote in 2018, they'll be looking for people who are willing to put Minnesotans in first place and to create a state where things work for everybody and not just special interests.
DFL House Minority Leader Melissa Hortman, thanks for being here. Senator Tom Bach, the Minority Leader in the Senate, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And this is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. We're at the Minnesota Capitol on the morning after the legislature wrapped up its 2018 session late last night. DFL Governor Mark Dayton says he plans to veto the big tax bill and the major spending bill passed by lawmakers over the weekend. Legislators also passed a public works construction bill and a fix to public employee pensions with broad bipartisan support. Those bills seem to be on firmer ground with the governor, but we'll wait and see. Here now to talk more about what happened and what comes next are the Republican leaders of the House and Senate. Kurt Dowd is the Speaker of the Minnesota House. He's on the phone. And Paul Gazelka is the Majority Leader of the Minnesota Senate. He is here in the Capitol Bureau. Thanks, both of you, for joining me. I appreciate it.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, let me just ask, what happened? Why couldn't you reach a deal with the governor on these major bills, the tax bill and the spending bill? Speaker Dowd, how about starting with you?
Well, you know, we certainly gave every effort to the governor to do that. And, you know, we've seen in past years that the governor doesn't engage as much as we would like. And at the end of session here, while we did have some conversations in the final days, it just seemed difficult for the governor to get to real compromise. It really seems like he wants everything he wants and he doesn't want to give it all. In the spending bill, we came about two-thirds of the way his direction in removing things that he thought were objectionable in the bill. And, you know, we really hope at the end of the day that he signs that bill. I think when he looks at and when Minnesotans look at the things that were in these bills, it's going to be very difficult for the governor to veto these bills and be able to justify it.
Yeah, and what I'll add to that, too, is we were all in agreement even as far as April 9th, so throughout the whole session, about what we needed to focus on, the tax bill with conformity, the bonding bill, the pension bill, and then fixing MNLARS, safe school funding, opioid abuse, and elder care abuse, and taking care of those. And then suddenly, just a few weeks ago, he said, no, we also have to have $138 million for education above what we were working on. And that really threw a wrench in everything because we had to figure out how do we work with the governor and accommodate that. I'm proud to say the House and the Senate figured out a way to do that and I think had a very good offer to the governor. And my hope is he still signs the bills.
The governor said that that money, he called it fake, I think. He said it's just taking pots of money that are already out there and doesn't add a lot of new money to help these schools avoid layoffs. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so first of all, the new money in the pension bill to fix the education pension was real money. We have $25 million of cash for safe schools in the bonding bill. We had $28 million of cash in the spending bill with another $30 million in the next 2 years. So that's all new money. And in the tax bill, we have $50 million of new money. And then in addition to that, about $172 million of money that's already there, but they can take it and use it for emergencies if they want to. And so most of it was new, and some of it was money that, frankly, when they had the House, Senate, and governor in Democrat hands, actually did that before as well. So I know it was a good offer from the Speaker and myself.
And Mr. Speaker, you mentioned that you think you can still convince the governor to sign these bills. How will you try to do that?
Well, I think Minnesotans need to do that. When you look at the spending bill, there are a lot of very good provisions, school safety, opioids, elder abuse, among many, many other things. The DWRS, which will prevent, you know, a lot of our Health and Human Services folks from getting a 7% cut in their wages. And that's home health care folks, I should say. And that's an important thing. You put all of those things together. I mean, there's a potential if this bill gets vetoed that school districts and schools could get a cut of somewhere between $50 and $90 million in special ed funding. So I think the governor needs to look at this bill in whole and say, you know, is the politics of vetoing a bill just to blame somebody worth actually putting all of these Minnesotans through the heartache that will happen if he doesn't sign these bills?
Senator Gazelka, do you think you can convince the governor?
Well, I'm certainly going to reach out to him. You know, he said he was going to take a couple of weeks to read the bill and to ponder it. I'm guessing he's going to get input from people out throughout Minnesota. And I think as he hears that, my hope is he changes his mind. I know this is a difficult process. It always is. It always goes right down to the end. But I'm glad he's taken a pause. I think that's really wise. And in the end, I hope he signs the bill.
That's Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka. He's here in the studio with me. On the phone is House Speaker Kurt Dowd. You can get a question in on the session that ended last night and what might happen next. Give us a call, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000 is the number. Senator, do you regret at all that the session was as short as it was? Do you wish you would have started earlier?
So I got to give the speaker credit here. He said we should start a couple weeks earlier. I wish I had that couple extra weeks. You know, like the tax bill and the spending bill, you know, would have given us, maybe more time to try to figure out a deal. But in the end, we didn't have that time. When we set that date, we didn't know that the federal government was going to do this massive tax relief bill to 90% of Minnesotans. We didn't know we were going to have some of the crises we're going to have. So suddenly we had a full plate in a short session. Particularly the tax bill, I would have liked to work more with the governor. But I got to say about the tax bill that I've heard people say that, you know, we gave some special interest, some benefit, or these multinational companies. Well, these multinational companies are Cargill and Target and Ecolabs and all these companies in Minnesota that were actually raising taxes on about $100 million. And we didn't want to do more than that. And then we took the money and lowered the taxes on the individuals. The lowest tax bracket and then the middle class tax bracket actually got a cut so that we could make sure that 99.8% of Minnesotans didn't have a tax increase. So I hope he signs that one as well.
The governor accused House Republicans in particular. He said they were caving into special interests who provide you with campaign contributions. He mentioned pharmaceutical companies, nursing home chains, the big corporations that wanted the tax cuts. Mr. Speaker, how do you respond to that?
You know, it's unfortunate that everything has to come down to, you know, making accusations. What we try to do is look at a bill and determine its importance and viability based on its merits. And, you know, raising a penny a pill, and, you know, I hate to even use those words because it's about 20 penny a pills that were, or pennies a pill that were proposed. And, you know, when you're talking about people who are on opioid drugs, the vast majority of those are in, you know, hospice or end of life or post-surgery situations where those drugs are needed. And when you put those sorts of additional costs on, that's going to get passed on to the end user, which ultimately raises the cost of health care and then ultimately raises the cost of health insurance. And we have a crisis in what we're paying for health care and for health insurance. So what we didn't want to do was add more money and cost to that equation. And we thought we could solve the problem, and that's exactly what we did without taking more money out of Minnesotans' pockets through higher health care costs. If he wants to call that caving to a special interest, our special interest is Minnesotans who are already paying too high of health care and health insurance costs, mostly because of Obamacare. So I'll take their side.
Yeah, let me add to that the opioid issue, because in the end, we just said we just want to make sure we have more money for some of the programs that are actually working in Minnesota. And so in the end, I think it was $10 million that we have in the spending bill, and then more money going forward, somewhere around that number, because it was fluid in the end. But there's a program in Little Falls, the area I represent, the hospital and the doctors and the police and the community all said, we have a way to drive down this problem. And so they actually worked, and we want to multiply that around the whole state. That was one of the programs that we want to fund. And the things that work, we want to fund, and we did provide resources. We didn't care where the money came from.
That's Paul Gazelka. He's the Republican Majority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. On the phone is House Speaker Kurt Dowd, of course, the Republican leader in the House. And let's see if we can go to Don in St. Paul. Don, go ahead.
Hello. My question for the Speaker and Majority Leader is, why did they feel the need to divert funding from the Environmental Trust Fund to pay for bonding for worthwhile projects? But some of those projects are in contravention to the promises made to the people of the state about what that funding would be for. So, for example, wastewater treatment funds. The funding was reduced in the basic bonding bill and shifted and substituted over, and the Environmental Trust Fund is going to be used for the next 20 years to pay for bonds, reducing money available for other projects.
Mr. Speaker, do you have a response to that?
You know, this was something that was worked out through the legislative process, and obviously I think folks saw those dollars as being, for clean water, and this is a use that is and probably couldn't be more important for clean water. So obviously it was something that worked its way through the legislative process and gained support of legislators. We kind of knew as it was going through, it may not be without controversy, but there's no question that these dollars, will be leveraged. So using those dollars to pay debt service, we can do a higher infusion of dollars right now into clean water type projects. And I think that was the driver behind going with that direction.
Yeah, and it was Senator Tori Westrum in the Senate that was working on that. Similar, we really wanted to focus on wastewater infrastructure. It's a crisis in across Minnesota. We don't have the resources. We wanted to free up more money now, recognizing that it also benefits clean water when we're taking care of people's wastewater infrastructure.
And speaking of the bonding bill, of course, Democrats helped to pass that last night. You also had a major fix to the public employee pension system. That was a unanimous vote in both the House and Senate. Are you confident the governor will sign both of those bills, Senator Gazelka?
Well, I hope he does. Again, the pension fix was something that we've been working on for a couple of years. It really makes the pensions be like they should have been 40 years ago, and so we've got them in good shape. Everybody had to compromise a bit. I think the governor wants to sign that one. As far as the bonding bill or the infrastructure bill, I can't imagine why he would not vote for that. In addition to all the projects for roads and bridges and wastewater infrastructure and buildings, there's $25 million in there as well for safe schools. And so in the end, I hope he signs it. I hope he signs all the bills that we have on his desk.
Why didn't you bring up the school safety money as a separate bill? I thought that was the sort of the consensus on Friday after that shooting in Texas.
Well, in the end, we ran out of time. I mean, we could have taken it out of there, but we made sure that it was in every bill so that if, like, for example, if the governor signs the bonding bills we just mentioned, there's $25 million there. I think that was above the number that he had in his proposal. If he signs two of the bills, it actually doubles. So, on the Senate's side, it was difficult to find time to get all of that done with all that we had to do. In the end, we finished with 4 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. So if we'd taken that out and added another wrinkle, I'm not sure the bonding bill would have gotten done.
I'll add to that, too, that, it seemed difficult sometimes to interpret exactly what the governor wanted us to do. And it really did. I have a lot of respect for the governor. We work together as well as we can. At the end of session, of course, it always gets a little tough. But when he asks us to send him individual bills, so we do that sometimes. We sent the money for the deputy registrars to him this week, and that was much needed dollars that deputy registrars who are struggling, some of whom will lose their businesses. We've even heard stories of losing their homes potentially. That was a really important bill. We sent that to him by itself. He vetoed it and sent us a letter back saying, I support this. I would have signed it had it been in a bigger bill. So, sometimes it's really difficult to figure out what this governor wants. And the fact that he's asking in the last day or two of session to change everything and send this to me individually, it kind of shows that you almost don't understand how the legislative process works. We can't always just flip on a dime and change everything. But the senator is right. We really made a priority safe schools, and there's funding in quite a few of these bills. Our proposal, if the governor signs these bills, is more than double what he asked for to keep our school kids safe. And that was a priority for Republicans this year.
I remember I talked to you, both of you, before the session started, and the thought was then that the hard feelings were behind you from last year with the vetoes and the court case and all that. But, Mr. Speaker, it sounds like you and the governor just don't trust each other very much.
I wouldn't say that at all. In fact, I wouldn't say that there was any hard feelings this session at all. I think we just have a basic disagreement on the fact that, you know, how some of these things should work. And I, you know, I'm somewhat vocal. I just say it like it is. And I don't mean that to be offensive to the governor, but I think the governor could have done a better job working with us and engaging with us. If he disagrees with that, I guess I don't know exactly. I do the best job I can. And while I get along with the governor on a personal level, I have a great deal of respect for him. And we get along fine on a personal level. We do have differences of opinion on policy. And our job and my job is to advocate for the legislative positions. We consider ourselves a co-equal branch of government. And, you know, as I can't sign bills into law, this governor can't pass bills. So we really need to work together. And I'm not sure the governor has figured that out. You know, he's the one who had a legacy here as he's ending his last session as governor. I would have thought that, you know, he, in working with us, could have secured a little stronger legacy. But I'm afraid that his legacy will be that, you know, he was not as engaged as he could have been and not as effective as he could have been had he worked a little better with everyone.
Senator, what do you think? Is the trust there, or what happened at the end here? It seemed like you didn't have all that many meetings behind closed doors with the governor, as somebody might expect you to do.
Well, it's always challenging at the end. I've only had two of these as leader, but both of them is a tremendous pressure on everyone at the end. And, you know, we're all trying to fight for what we believe in. It all gets mashed into one thing that you hope both sides can live with. And, you know, the governor is doing the best he can. I know the House and Senate, we did the best we could. And, you know, my hope is that these bills that came forward, I'm proud of the bills. I think every one of the bills is something that Minnesotans would be proud of. And I'm hoping as the governor reflects on them that he'll sign them.
Let's take another caller. I wonder if we can go to line 6 and Pat in Roseville.
Yes. Yes, I have a question. I'd like to know why, from the legislators, why nothing was advanced on the cell phone bill. I don't even know if it got out of committee. And it seems to me most Minnesotans are really in favor of something in a bill for against cell phones, using cell phones while driving. So I'd like to know what happened there.
Yeah,
you know,
go ahead, Kurt.
Question, if you will. This was something that was hotly debated and discussed in the House. And, you know, it takes sometimes many, many sessions before things get enough grassroots support to move. And, you know, I think there were some questions and concerns about the hands-free bill itself. What we did is at the end, and I'm not sure people even know about this yet, but the final bills included some compromise language that actually would increase the penalties for texting and driving. And so while we didn't do the total hands-free bill, the compromise was that we did increase the penalties. I think we either doubled or just more than doubled the fines and penalties for texting and driving. And it's not just, texting. It's any sort of distraction with your phone. So it could be internet or anything like that. So, you know, we feel like that wasn't maybe as far as some wanted to go, but it was what we could get through the legislature and get compromise on this session. And I think it's an important step. But I know this issue is growing. It'll grow grassroots support, and eventually we will probably have a hands-free bill in Minnesota.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's a number of bills over the years that just take time to build momentum. You know, the fact that we actually took a step, you know, and increased penalties, that was what a number of senators and I'm sure representatives wanted to do. A number of folks want to have more education. There's only like one half page of the 100 pages of training on distracted driving. And I would just simply say for those that want hands-free, don't give up. We did a survey and found many passionate people for very good reasons want that done. Most of them that responded, though, it was about texting, which is already illegal. But like I said, don't give up. I believe, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if next year that actually got done.
Another thing that didn't happen this year, and it was somewhat surprising, was the proposed constitutional amendment to dedicate some sales tax money to transportation. I know it passed in the House, but not in the Senate, Senator.
Yeah, so last November I said that we should have a constitutional amendment funding roads and bridges from sales tax on auto parts. The House was on the same page, and we were going to move that forward. In the Senate, I had a few, like three or so, Republican senators that didn't want to do any constitutional amendments. Didn't matter what it was for, they just didn't believe in that process. And so I needed five Democrat senators to support that. Senator Bach told me at the beginning of session that he had five Democratic senators that would help us pass that. And I was assuming it was moving forward. And then less than a month ago, so 3 to 4 weeks before the end of session, Senator Bach said he had zero Democratic votes, and that in effect killed it. For whatever reason, the Democrats are having an internal struggle between blue-collar unions and public unions and whether we should do that. I think it would have been very, very good for Minnesota. So, you know, we had to let it go. In the end, though, we then put more money into roads and bridges and the bonding bill. But I think the constitutional amendment would have been the right way to go.
And Speaker Dowd, are drivers just going to have to put up with more potholes?
Well, I was definitely disappointed we didn't get that passed, because one of the criticisms of our transportation plan last year was that they weren't constitutionally dedicated. Well, then, you know, the same people that were criticizing not constitutionally dedicating those dollars we put from the general fund last year are the same ones who are saying this year, no, we can't put it on the ballot to let voters decide whether we should constitutionally dedicate that. But the bottom line is, and we took a different direction here at the end, and if people look at the infrastructure bill that we passed last night, you will see probably, I think, about a little over $500 million for road and bridge projects across the state. And we specifically line-itemed projects like Highway 14 in southern Minnesota, Highway 23 out in western Minnesota. I have to believe that there are areas around the state that when they see the dollars that Republicans in the House and Senate put into their projects, they are going to be jumping for joy, because I know Highway 14 in southern Minnesota, this is a project that they've talked about for like 40 years. And finally, there's some significant funding, $100 million, I think, in each case, to tackle these big, regionally important transportation projects. So if anything, if people remember about transportation, this biennium has been a biennium that we have put probably more money into roads and bridges than any in modern history.
Mr. Speaker, the House is up for re-election this year. The Senate isn't. If the governor goes ahead and vetoes these big bills, who do you think is going to take the blame? How do you present that message when you're out campaigning?
Well, I think it was important to listen to what Melissa Hortman said in the previous segment. You know, she keeps talking about tax cuts for big corporations and all of this stuff. When people look at what was in these bills, and if the governor vetoes them, talking points aren't going to matter. People want to know what the facts are, and the facts just simply don't match what the Democrats are saying. We had a slight tax increase for corporations and tax cuts for low and middle income Minnesotans. The governor asked for money for schools. He asked for $130 million in that bill. We gave him $225 million. we literally doubled his number. When people look at the spending bill, it's money to reduce cuts to healthcare workers. It's money for our schools, in school safety, and many, many other important things. When that funding bill gets a veto, if it does, there will be drastic cuts to schools in special education dollars. My hope is that people read these bills, understand what's in them, and contact the governor to say, it's not about politics and elections. What these bills do is what's right and good for Minnesotans. And I will run in the election based on our record and what we did, and I know that we'll be successful.
Yeah, and I wanted to add to that, because it's really a two-year cycle. Last year was the budget when we passed tax relief in Minnesota for farmers, for seniors. Their Social Security income is now not taxed if you're under $75,000, I believe it is, for students with student loans, for farmers with property tax relief. We passed transportation dollars then. We funded education but had reforms. We took care of real ID and so much more. So when you look at the two-year cycle, what the House and Senate did, Republicans, they have a lot to run on that's really good.
And Mr. Speaker, those gun control bills never made it out of committee in the House. How big of an issue will that be in the campaign this fall?
You know, I'm certain that Democrats will try to make it an issue. You know, luckily in Minnesota, you know, we have some of the strongest gun laws in the country and the most common sense gun laws in the country. And that was a result of the Cold Spring Ricori shootings that happened a dozen or more years ago. You know, the legislature revisited all of those at that time. You know, I think that folks are still willing to come to the table and work on actual consensus and compromise. But, you know, we do have a legislature that respects the hunting and gun ownership tradition that we have here in Minnesota. And what we want to do in the legislature is actually solve problems. And I think you heard even Senator Bach, a Democrat, in the last segment talking about the fact that it's more important that we solve these problems and not just pass things that are going to make people feel good. You know, everybody wants a bill that will stop or prevent school shootings. And if there was a bill that would do that and guarantee that, it would pass unanimously, I guarantee it. But unfortunately, that magic bill doesn't exist.
Well, we'll have to end it there. House Speaker Kurt Dowd, thanks so much for being here. Senator Paul Gazelka, the majority leader in the state Senate, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And we'll keep an eye on what happens and see what the governor does with these bills. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Mulcahy.